from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Catholic, same-sex attracted, and striving to live in unity with Christ and the Church, that's the path of those involved with Courage International Apostolate. For more than 35 years, Courage has accompanied men and women to grow in virtue, friendship, prayer, and communion with Christ through the sacraments. On Register Radio this week, we meet Father Philip Bochansky, Courage's newest leader. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio along with Matthew Bunsen. We are joined by Father Philip Bochansky, a priest of the Archdiocese for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, who now works full-time in Connecticut for Courage International Apostolate. Father Bochansky takes the helm of Courage from Father Paul Czech, who's no stranger to the Register. Father Czech led the organization since 2008 and was appointed by Father John Harvey, the late founder of Courage. Father Bochansky, it's so good to have you here in studio in Birmingham.
Thanks very much. It's great to be invited, and it's my first time at EWTN, so it's very exciting.
Well, we are very glad to have you. I hope you've gotten a tour, or you will soon in the morning. But I would like to talk to you about your new ministry. And our listeners know the ministry, which is Courage, but they don't know you. We've had Father Czech on the show quite a bit, but this is our first time meeting. So let's start with a little bit about who you are. You're obviously a priest of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia originally,
correct?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And that's where I got started with the Courage Ministry. I was the chaplain there for our local Courage group for about 5 years.
Okay.
And the members of the group invited me to come with them to the national conferences that we hold each summer for our membership. And
sure.
That's where I met Father Czech and some of the other people involved in the kind of running of the apostolate more generally nationally, internationally. And so after 5 years as the local chaplain, they expanded the staff of the office, the Central Courage Office, and Father Czech invited me to come on board. So I've been working with him for the past 2 years.
Okay.
And then he was called back to his diocese in January, so I succeeded him as director of the apostolate then.
And what is the work of the office, I guess? You know, I understand Courage to have chapters all over the country. It's very local work. So what does the national office do?
Sure. Well, part of my work is coordinating our local chapters and their chaplains, helping people who reach out to us because they found our website, helping them to find their local chapters, talking with people who are saying, you know, we don't have a chapter here, but I know I could use it, and I know some other people
sure.
like me, helping them to find ways to reach out to their diocese, and then coordinating with the diocese to get a new chapter set up. Training chaplains, working on revising our handbook for chaplains right now, expanding it a bit. So really kind of facilitating those local connections first, then providing these national opportunities like our summer conferences for our members, which is kind of a retreat plus just some ideas about how to practice virtue and grow in chastity, things like that. So
right.
getting them together on a regular basis, providing opportunities online for our members to communicate with one another. So that's a big part of the work there is kind of supporting our chaplains and coordinating unity among our members.
Well, it sounds like it's all about creating community.
Correct, yeah.
A big community.
Absolutely.
I think one of the most important things perhaps about this ministry, which is to men and women who have same-sex attraction, is to make them feel that they're not alone in the journey, in their walk with Christ, because we all experience difficulties in our walk. We all experience joys and sadnesses in our walk, and I think part of this is creating the atmosphere for them to experience those joys and sadnesses in community, and that's what you're doing.
I think that's absolutely right. Everybody is called to chastity according to our state in life, and married people are called to chastity in a particular way. Priests and consecrated religious are called to vow chastity and celibacy. But when priests and religious take on that obligation of chastity, we have community and
right.
accountability and structure and tradition. And that was the insight that Cardinal Cook and Father Harvey, who founded Courage, had. It's much more difficult sometimes
right.
to live a chaste single life in the world if you're trying to do that all by yourself. So our Courage groups are designed to give just that opportunity for community, for fellowship and support.
Father, go ahead.
I was going to say, then the other part of our work is to provide continuing formation for, for priests and for others in ministry who are on the front lines in their parishes, who maybe don't have the time or you know, would be hesitant to be a courage chaplain, but are certainly going to encounter people in their own parish settings who want to know how to preach about the issue, how to give good advice in confession, what to do when someone comes to them in the office. So I and Father Chuck, we're doing a lot of traveling to talk to priests in different dioceses so that, you know, I always say if the church is a field hospital, like Pope Francis talks about, courage is kind of the MASH unit behind the lines, you know.
Sure.
But the parish priests and the deacons and lay people who collaborate with them, they are doing frontline, you know, pastoral triage and spiritual first aid. So a big part of our work from our central office is to provide opportunities for continuing formation for them and then resources that they can share with their parishes as well.
And of course, right now, the cultural landscape, which includes our sexual mores, are changing so much that information, that training, and that pastoral information for the pastors is so needed.
Yeah, and we're really looking for opportunities to be part of the conversation, both in the church and in the broader community, and secular conversations about these issues really don't always include all sides. And Father Harvey said many years ago, our best ambassadors are our members. Especially when we have a chance for priests and others in ministry to meet courage members and encourage members. Encourage is our group for parents and other loved ones of people who maybe aren't practicing the faith and are in homosexual relationships. When they can speak just from the heart to priests and say, this is what we need you to know about us, and this is what we need priests in our parishes to be able to do, it makes a huge impact.
And Father, to pick up on the theme of the field hospital, I can imagine as you travel the country that you must have the impression that the field hospitals are going to be pretty full. The MASH units are badly needed in culture today, including all of the legal complications that we're seeing with LGBT rights, and also a number of people who identify themselves as transgender, transsexual. Is gender dysphoria something that Courage recognizes today as part of that ministry?
Well, I think we're all kind of learning together more about where gender dysphoria and questions, confusion about the person's sexual identity, where they come from, what that's related to. It seems that there's a lot of attention ought to be paid to the psychological side of those questions. So there is some overlap, I think, with questions of same-sex attraction. There's some similarities, but also lots of differences. So I think in terms of how to best provide care to people who themselves are living with confusion about their sexual identity, we're still kind of discerning the best approach for that. Where we are already involved is through our Encourage groups, which I mentioned a minute ago, because for parents and spouses, sometimes siblings, other loved ones, the question is always, how do I stay true to the faith and say what I believe, speak the truth in love, and at the same time keep my family bonds intact? And sometimes it's not just a rift between parent and adult son or daughter, but sometimes a rift even between spouses of a son or daughter, who are parents of a son or daughter who is experiencing this gender dysphoria. They have real differences of opinion on how to handle the situation, how to address it in their family, and it can cause a lot of problems even within a marriage. So our Encourage groups meet to just kind of share their experiences and pray together, support one another, encourage one another with the guidance of a priest chaplain. The kind of pastoral support that we can provide for our parents and loved ones of people with same-sex attraction is going to be very similar to what we can provide for people whose loved ones are dealing with gender identity questions.
Yeah, to that very point, not to ask a broad sort of sweeping question, but what are some of the more practical initial starting pieces of advice that you give to a family member, especially a parent, who learns that their child has same-sex attraction?
Well, you know, this is kind of a third part of my work in the office, is just these phone calls that come in because people don't know where else to turn. And so
right.
I'm never quite sure when it's like being in a parish, you know, you're never quite sure when you pick up the phone what's going to be on the other side. But oftentimes it's... I think the parent's initial reaction is, and they're calling me because they just found out and they had a conversation that didn't go so well and they want to know what to do next.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to get into kind of an emergency room mentality, you know, and all parents want the same thing. They want to know that their children are safe and they want to know their children are happy.
Right.
And when they perceive that one or both of those things is not the case, then they want to know how to fix it, right? And so if your child falls off the swing set, you take them to the emergency room and find the doctor and get it fixed. And so sometimes I think parents have the same kind of attitude here. Like, I can see that this isn't going to be, you know, the answer for my child to be happy in the long run. What do I do? How do I fix it? Just tell me where to take them, what to show them, what book to give them to read. How do I fix this? And so my first response is, okay, you have to calm down, right? Don't panic. This is about understanding your son or daughter and not trying
right.
to fix your son or daughter. And so I think right off the bat, the first thing to do is to listen. And then the second thing to do is to listen some more, and then to listen some more, and to listen some more. Because, you know, the feelings that we have in terms of desire, in terms of looking for intimacy, for love, for closeness, all those things that are often manifested in sexual attraction, sexual desire, they're connected to deep needs of the heart, right? And which are
right.
good needs. The idea that, you know, God, what is the first thing God says about the human being? It's not good for the man to be alone,
right?
So we all have these desires for intimacy, for knowing and being known, for being accepted, etc. And I think, you know, even when the church has to say this particular type of attraction or a desire for this particular type of intimacy is not appropriate because it's not the context for which God creates sexuality, still underlying that are going to be real basic needs and desires for love. And
but
so if parents can listen to their child and give them opportunities where they know they're safe to tell their own story and to say
That's
to
right.
their parents, you know what, I needed this at this point in my life and I didn't get it from you sometimes. You know, that can be a painful thing or I've always felt this, but I never really had an opportunity or never felt like I could tell you about it. These can be very difficult conversations, but to have conversations about, you know, who are you and what do you need and how can I be there for you and what can I do? Those are the conversations that take time to unfold and to do something about, but that in the long run help to create a deeper understanding and an ability to really love.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio, and I'm talking to Father Philip Bachansky. He is the director of Courage, which is an apostolate that reaches out and provides pastoral care and community to men and women who have same-sex attraction and to their family members in the group called Encourage. Matthew Bunsen is joining us as well. So, Father Bachansky, you really, what you have been saying has struck me as being so deeply personal. You know, this is a ministry that is so deeply personal. It is a ministry, an apostolate that I think I'm repeating your words is really about listening and understanding where our brothers and sisters in Christ are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about primarily about telling them this is wrong. It's not primarily about some moral law that is imposed. And I think that that's something that we misunderstand. Of course, the teaching is there, and it's important to communicate the full teaching of the church. But that teaching is not just a bunch of don'ts.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And we take St. Paul, for example, as a model. St. Paul was not confused about the moral law, right?
No.
And he was not shy about saying what the moral law was, right? But he also tells us, he said, that we're called to speak the truth in love, that we need to say things that people need to hear, the things that will really help them, things that will build them up, right?
Right.
And, you know, Pope Francis picks up on this in whenever he talks about preaching, you know, and he says that the first proclamation is the proclamation of the mercy of God and the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do catechesis, and then from catechesis you draw moral conclusions, right? But I think we have to, it's not a matter of not talking about morality. Of course, we have to say what's right and what's wrong, but right. There's a certain order to it, and I think it gets back again to relationship. If I don't know that the lawgiver loves me and has a plan for my life, if I have no relationship with the lawgiver, why on earth should I keep the law?
Right.
And so to just, you're right, we can't be perceived as a church that just says no, but we have to make it clear that when we do have to say no to, never to people, right, but we say no to behaviors, no to certain choices, it's always to help people say a bigger yes.
Right.
You know, and so we're proposing, you know, this plan that God has for us that's meant to lead to our happiness and our fulfillment in this life and the next. And sometimes that means you have to say, now let's look at the road you're on, mm-hmm. and see if it's the road that God has in mind for you. And if not, do you want to get back on that road? I can show you, you know, the way to get back on that road. We can walk that path together, right? But we need to make sure that we're always helping people to see that to say no to some things, to sacrifice some things, is always because we're in pursuit of something great.
This is Register Radio on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More from Father Philip Bachansky on courage ministry to men and women with same-sex attraction when we return from the break.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
We continue with our conversation with Father Philip Bachansky, the new leader of Courage Apostolate, and I ask Father Bachansky to share his own vocation story.
Well, you know, I've wanted to be a priest since I was about 7 years old, and I don't think I ever really considered doing anything else. I tell people when I was seven, you know, I wanted to be a priest like a seven-year-old wants to be a police officer or a fireman, or, you know, because it looked cool, right?
Yeah.
The church where I grew up was, you know, the windows were kind of dark blue, and so the church was kind of dark and always smelled like incense, and the pastor at the time was like 6'4", booming voice and white hair, you know, he looked like God, right? So it made a big impression on me.
Yeah.
And I think that's how God planted the seed in my mind that this could be something I would want to do. When I was an altar server all through grade school, and when I was in high school, I worked at the rectory answering the door and helping people mm-hmm. with mass cards and telling priests their appointments were there.
Sure.
And so all of that kind of conspired to just give me a chance to see more behind the scenes, so to speak, like what a priest's life was like. So when I went to the seminary after high school, or when I was ordained at 25, the reasons I was there and I was doing that were different from when I was a seven-year-old. but I can see kind of a logical progression, like it all built that way, you know. So I never expected when I was ordained or as a seminarian that this would be my full-time ministry.
Sure.
You know, I was 15 years in parish ministry, mm-hmm. Which is a good preparation for anything.
You know, absolutely.
I was giving a talk to a gathering of priests, and they said, well, where did you get your psychology degree? I said, I didn't study psychology. They said, well, how do you know so much about these? And I said, 15 years of hearing confessions, you know, you pick it up. But, it all was kind of providential that I got involved in this work with Courage. But, you know, I have to say it's the part of my priesthood where I feel most fatherly, most like a spiritual father, you know, because of that personal connection and people entrusting their their lives to me and to our other chaplains.
Well, you're dealing with something most intimate to people, and so that's important.
And I mean, I think it's important to say, too, people who are experiencing same-sex attractions are not the only people dealing with emotional or spiritual wounds.
Oh, God, no.
You know? And so, you know, so my work with Courage has really given me a perspective that I think makes me a better confessor in general, you know, makes me better, you know, when I live in a parish now, when I go to the hospital or when I'm preaching, you know, all those kind of lessons I'm learning from people who've been so honest about their needs, you know, really helps me to be more, a better priest in general, I think.
And God knows where we all are in that, in that regard.
And Father, I'm curious, you've talked about being a confessor, mm-hmm. That your role as a confessor has been aided immeasurably and has also in its own way informed your ministry. Mm-hmm. Do you find, too, that helping people to understand authentic freedom and what they can do with that freedom plays a role in helping them to lead their lives more fully, especially with regard to the Courage ministry?
Yeah, I think, you know, taking back to the context of confession, you know, sometimes we come to confession and it's kind of like, all right, I have this thing, I've got to get rid of this thing, now I'm mm-hmm. going to go and I'm going to say it and then it'll be done, right? But we don't often get to the heart of, well, why do I keep going back to this habit, whether it's gossip or gluttony or mm-hmm. or, you know, some kind of bad behavior, you know, what is it that's driving me, and you know, is there something more I should be doing about it? So I think that's an insight that's really been maybe strengthened for me and working with people, you know, talking about their attractions and their desires and helping them to see, like, well, these things don't come from nowhere, right? There's St. Thomas Aquinas said one time, nobody does evil because they think it's evil. It's because in the moment they misperceive it to be good or necessary.
Right.
So, you know, learning to talk to people and say, well, what are you really after? What are you really looking for when that you've kind of come to the conclusion that you're going to find it here? Well, maybe that's not the only place. If it's something good that you're looking for, there's somewhere else to find it. And so, yeah, it's given me some, I guess, perspective and nerve to say to somebody in confession, you know, if this is something that you're confessing all the time but doesn't seem to change, maybe it's time to take a deeper look and see, like, what are the things that make this temptation seem more powerful, or when what are the times or places that where I you know, I keep falling into this habit of sin? What is it about my day-to-day life that maybe is underlying this? You know, if you'd like to talk to me or talk to a priest that you trust, even outside of this context of confession, get to the bottom of these things. It can change your life.
Yeah. I really love the way that you just described in very ordinary words what we usually call the occasion of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so much I think about your ministry particularly, and the way Pope Francis calls us to accompany people is about making sure that we don't speak in cliches, that we don't speak in a language that isn't understandable to people. We can get to that language, of mm-hmm. course, but we need to make to define what we mean when we say those things, and that's what you just did when you talked about the circumstances that are leading someone into a temptation. And so I think that you've done it several times in the course of our conversation, and I think it's beautiful. I think it's something we can all learn from. And in fact, speaking of learning and information, I know that you have a summer conference. When is the summer conference, I guess, and who is welcome to attend it?
Well, so our summer conference is planned particularly for our Courage and Encourage members and chaplains as kind mm-hmm. of, it's kind of a family reunion, you know.
Okay.
But it's certainly open to other people who, you know, are interested in learning more about the apostolate, people who wouldn't necessarily have a chapter in their area. You know, lots of people come who don't have a regular Courage meeting, but maybe they participate in our online groups. So it's going to be held the last week in July, July 27th to 30th, mm-hmm. at Mundelein Seminary, just outside of Chicago.
Great.
We have a special program on the 26th, that's the Wednesday, one-day program for priests. So it's free. Priests can sign up for just that one-day program, or they can sign up for that and then stay for the conference.
Great.
As well. So all the priests in the Chicago area, you know, if you can drive there, please come. And we have a... kind of a standard program that we do to help priests understand why the church teaches the way that it does, how to present that in a compassionate and faithful way, just some insights into things they'll need to know for pastoral care in this regard. So, anybody who themselves is living with this experience and who's at least interested in understanding our goals, the first goal is to live chaste lives, right?
Right.
And then to grow in prayer, fellowship, and support of one another, grow in friendship, and give good examples. So if people are want that for their own lives, then they're very welcome to come and join us at that conference. We also have been putting on another set of conferences called Truth and Love.
Yes, you just had one.
Yeah, just in Phoenix in January. And those tend to be about once every year and a half or so.
Okay.
And those conferences are specifically designed for people in ministry.
Okay.
Priests and deacons, parish ministers, people who work for their diocese, especially in like Family Life Office and mm-hmm. Catholic Charities, things like that. We have some counselors who come to just understand a little bit better, you know, how to approach somebody and in a way that's faithful to the church's understanding of the human person. We don't have a date yet for the next
sure.
Truth and Love conference, but that'd be something people would have a more kind of ministerial, professional interest in the work that we do are welcome to really recommend it to come to those conferences.
And of course, there's so much information on your website, which is courageerc.org, CourageRC.org. There's a ton of information here, not only about practical things, chapters or conference dates and things like that, but also articles and teachings of the church and online support. So that's really a tremendous value to people. I wanted to continue a little bit with how your ministry might be different from that of Father Chex, who you've worked with for the last couple years, but now he is no longer with Courage, and it's you who is leading the show. And obviously, you're two different priests, two different backgrounds, I'm sure two different modes of operating. So, what do you think might be different?
Well, I hope very little. It changes because, first of all, I respect Father Chex and have learned a tremendous amount from him. But even more so because, you know, both of us are very conscious of trying to uphold the legacy of Father Harvey,
right.
who, you know, Father John Harvey was an oblate priest of St. Francis de Sales. At Cardinal Cook's request, he founded the first group in 1980 when he was already in his 60s, I think.
Wow.
And he led Courage until 2008. The year that he turned 90. So,
wow, this was his retirement ministry,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right, yeah. So almost 30 years of leadership, and he still is very much present in the things mm-hmm. that we do and the spirit of our fellowship when we all get together. So we're really trying to preserve and hand on the legacy of compassion and faithfulness and understanding that we receive from him. You know, I think if I had a plan or an agenda, for where I'd like to see the apostolate go, I think one of Father Harvey's gifts was identifying the wounds that maybe are part of a person's experience when they're living with same-sex attractions, and being very compassionate to that. And Father Chex's gift is really situating our response to wounds and to choices in the heart of the church's teaching. What I'd like to do is to kind of help people to take another step forward and say, mm-hmm. well, now that I've identified, where my desires are, where my wounds might be, how I'm going to respond to that. Well, now where is my place in the church? So, think about planning conferences, for example, or giving workshops, things like that. Really try to focus on questions of friendship, vocation,
right.
identity.
Right.
Helping people to see, that none of the things that we're talking about in terms of woundedness or in terms of desires or in terms of identity, none of those things disqualifies anybody from being a disciple and a brother or sister in Christ and having a role in the church, having a real vocation that's not a consolation prize, not a compromise, but really, this is in my circumstances in which I didn't choose and which,
right.
Given the choice, I wouldn't have chosen. How do I hear God's voice speaking to me right now, where I am, and how am I going to respond? So, you know, I think it's a logical kind of deepening of our self-understanding to question, all right, now where do I fit? What do I do? What's my vocation? So that I think is what I try and concentrate on.
And how do you overcome that fear?
Right.
Right.
It's such a beautiful, again, it's such a beautiful ministry, and it's so needed. I think often so misunderstood. But it's the important thing is that this is possible to live, especially in community, this fullness of life, mm-hmm. even chaste life.
Yeah.
You know, our culture doesn't think you can live a chaste life and really be living
sure.
a full life. But the fact that there are so many courage groups, how many are there?
We're in about 2/3 of the dioceses in the United States right
okay.
now. Yeah.
So
and in 15 other countries.
Well, so that's 100.
Just over 200.
Just
total.
Over 200. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. I mean, that's huge. Mm-hmm. That's huge. There are people in each one of these places who are seeking to live this life.
That's right.
You are not alone. You know, when you are seeking to live the fullness of the church teaching and the fullness of the human person,
right.
with same-sex attraction.
Right.
So
yeah, and you know, I think part of it is just it's trying to overcome. That cultural assumption that a life without sex is a life without love, right?
Right.
That chastity makes you miserable, right?
Right?
Chastity sets you free. And, you know, we have this beautiful little gift of providence that the sixth commandment and the sixth beatitude are kind of two sides of the same coin, mm-hmm. right? So the sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, basically don't do sexual things with anybody but your spouse, right? It's important, and I agree with it, and it's the root of our obligation to be chaste, but it's expressed in kind of a negative way, thou shalt not.
Right.
The sixth beatitude gives the positive reason for the sixth commandment. The sixth beatitude says, blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God.
Right.
So when we're trying to be pure of heart, when we're avoiding pornography, when we're avoiding lustful looks, when we're avoiding, you know, fantasies and getting ourselves in unchaste situations, then all those obstacles to seeing God are removed, right? Our
right.
sight is clear. I see who God is, who I am, what God sees in me, what God sees in my future, the kind of relationships that God wants me to have. I see what God sees in other people, see them more clearly. I see myself more clearly. So, you know, chastity really, it's not about what a person is not doing, right? It's about keeping the road free of obstacles so that I can live the life that God has called me for and created me for.
Father Bochansky, as we close, is there a saint or a prayer that is sort of the go-to for courage that we can pass along to our listeners?
Well, so our patron saints for the apostolate are St. Charles Lwanga and his companions. They were martyred in Uganda,
mm-hmm.
Between 1885 and 1887, most of them over the course of a few days in 1886. They were young men who were converts to the faith and worked in the court of the king. The cultural situation was very pagan in the court of the king, and lots of unchastity with the opposite sex, with the same sex. And part of what enraged the king and led to the most fierce part of the persecution was the refusal on the part of these saints to participate in unchaste actions mm-hmm. with him. So there are our patron saints, and you know, encourage people to learn more about them and their real heroic examples. Some of them were only 14, 15 years old. Some
yeah,
of it had only been baptized a few days before.
Wow.
And
what courage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So, and it's also, their feast day happens to be the day that Father Harvey was ordained a priest. So.
Oh, wow, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, so it's a nice little connection there, too. So there are saints, and I think one of the prayers that we use a lot is the Memorare,
mm-hmm.
Because we count on Our Lady and the saints to pray for us, and it's just a reminder to us that they don't forget our needs, even when we sometimes look at ourselves and not to God. They're always interceding on our behalf.
Well, to know more about Father Philip Bochansky, you can go to Peter Jesser Smith's article at ncregister.com. It's called Courage Ministry to Catholics with Same-Sex Attraction Has a New Leader. Father Bochansky, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be with you both.
Take care.
Thanks.
For two important stories on this topic of ministry to men and women who struggle with same-sex attraction, go to ncregister.com. There's a story, Treading the Uneven Terrain of Gay Ministry in the Church. There's part one, and then there's part two, How to Accompany Catholics with Same-Sex Attraction. For more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.